I introduced St. Jane Frances de Chantal at the beginning, but I forgot to mention that today is also the death anniversary of one of our associates, Leonie Bianco. Some of her relatives are here, yes. You're the niece? Nieces. So, third death anniversary, I remember, because when she died, we were in one of those strict lockdowns for COVID. So we pray for Leonie today and give thanks to God for her life. Now, we start today reading from the book of the prophet Ezekiel. It's the very beginning of the book, and he explains his initial vision of the glory of the Lord, which is an interesting story in itself, but we who follow the liturgy can also see this in the context of this period of August, which is focused on glory. Remember last week we had the Feast of the Transfiguration. Jesus was transfigured in glory. The glory of God was shining on his face. And between the Transfiguration and Thursday, the Solemnity of the Assumption received the same glory on Mary, or Mary assumed up into glory. So this vision of Ezekiel, we could compare to the Transfiguration. He sees a vision of glory, just like Peter, James, and John saw Jesus transfigured on the mountain. Ezekiel sees this glorious figure, almost impossible to describe, something like fire, something like sapphire, something like electrum, something like rainbow. he puts in all these comparisons, and then says, oh, it's something like that. So he has this vision of glory. If you know the story of Ezekiel, you know that his life was not all visions of glory. He had a very difficult mission, like all the prophets. So this vision is to give him inspiration, to give him light, so that he'll have the strength to pursue his mission and to persevere without losing sight of what he's up to. Just like the Transfiguration gave light to the three apostles so that they could enter into Jerusalem and face the Passion. At least that was part of the intent of Jesus, to strengthen them for the contradictions that they would face in the future. Well, this is something like what happens to Ezekiel, because in Ezekiel's case, he sees the glory of the Lord, but he also, before long, sees the glory of the Lord departing from the people because of the people's sinfulness. And he has to announce to the people, you've messed it up here. you've broken the covenant, and you've destroyed your relationship with God. And so he's had to withdraw his glory from his people. Of course, that wasn't very well received. But that's the way the prophet's mission is. They have to sometimes speak a difficult word. Now, as I reflected on today's prophet Ezekiel and the beginning of his mission, the kind of high point to prepare him for some of the low points, I couldn't help but think again about the prophet we heard about yesterday, Elijah. It's one of the striking images from yesterday's liturgy. Elijah, in the first reading yesterday, was really at a low point. He was all alone, he was in the desert, and no food, no money, he just lies down in the desert like, oh, this is the end of my life. I might as well die now. Lord, take my life. Remember that passage? It's very striking because it represents the human condition so often. Once we have done everything we possibly can. And Elijah, remember, he was a very powerful prophet, a very successful prophet, holy man, faithful. And even though he had done everything right and had defeated the false prophets, he was hunted and life was threatened, and he's left there alone, abandoned in the desert. So that's what can happen. And that is what happens when we are following the Lord and we run out of our human capacity to do any more. And we all face this because we are limited. We can't do any more. We can't accomplish more. We're out of energy, we're out of money, we're out of opportunities. Nobody's supporting us or whatever we might feel. We may not really be as alone as it feels, but that experience of Elijah represents the human condition. And you know what happened? Elijah says, okay, Lord, take my life. He prays for death. And the Lord's answer to that prayer was not to take his life, but to give him life. So he answered his prayer, but not in the way he expected. He gave him what he needed to be able to continue his mission, to continue his journey, the journey of life, the journey to the Holy Mountain. Well, it might seem like Ezekiel and Elijah, the experience of Ezekiel seeing glory and the experience of Elijah seeing nothing, might seem like two completely different things, and they are very different. But they're similar in this sense. In both cases, God provides what is needed for the prophet to do his mission. God provides what is needed, not what the prophet himself expected or wanted. I mean, Ezekiel didn't ask to see the glory of the Lord. It just burst on the scene. And Ezekiel didn't ask to be sent to the people and tell them about their wickedness either, but that was his mission. So, but God provided for Ezekiel to do his mission. God provided for Elijah to do his mission, to complete his journey. And that, even though it looks very different in the two examples, it's the same in that sense. God provides. And this, I think, is helpful for us to remember. God provides for us what we need to do what he wants us to do. He doesn't give us what we want, what we think we need. He gives us what we really need. He doesn't answer the prayers the way we expect him to. He answers them in a way that makes it possible for us to complete our mission, to grow in holiness, to grow in union with him, to do what he wants us to do in the world. And when we're finished with our mission in this world, to enter into glory. Elijah, in yesterday's reading, was praying for death. I know sometimes people are in that condition. And very often, God doesn't answer that prayer by taking their life. I think more often, people who are sickly or facing trials, they pray for relief, they pray for life. And sometimes God doesn't answer that prayer by healing them, he takes them home. So we can't determine what God has decided is best. We have to pray, yes, make our requests, yes, but then also say, yes, your will be done, Lord. You know better than I do. Well, that takes us to today's gospel, this very puzzling occasion where the collectors of the tax ask Peter if Jesus pays the tax or not. And Peter says, yeah, he pays it. Like, everybody pays the tax. And then Jesus tells this odd story about kings of the earth and whether they take taxes from subjects or foreigners. Something in this translation, I think, doesn't make sense to us because, of course, kings tax their own subjects. That's where they have to get their taxes from. Kings don't tax foreigners unless they come into the country. I'm a foreigner and I have to pay to stay in the Philippines. Well, that's understood. Foreigners, when they go out of their own country and visit other countries, they pay the visa fees and all that. But foreigners who are not, I mean, kings can't collect money from people who aren't in their own country. So there's something weird about this. In fact, this translation is not even accurate. He doesn't say from their subjects or foreigners. The word subjects is really sons. Do they collect taxes from their sons? That might make a little more sense. Kings don't tax their own sons. And that's important because Jesus is using this strange comparison to reveal who he is. He's not talking about taxes. He's talking about his identity and whether he is subject to earthly authority or not. And the answer is no. He's the Son of the Father. He's not subject to the whatever requirements there are. Except that he has humbled himself and taken on the form of a man. He's the form of a slave, in fact. So he has subjected himself, even though he's not required. He's really exempt, as he says. Sons of the king are exempt. But in order to pay the tax for everybody else, Jesus has come into the world, and he takes on that responsibility. So there's something very profound here, if you can get past the initial confusion that's raised about what do kings do. What does God do? Well, God has a right to the obedience of his creatures, and he also has a right in justice to punish offenders. In fact, that's what he should do, because that's the just thing. Except, he doesn't want to harm those whom he loves, so he comes up with a solution. I'll send my son. My son will take on the price, he'll pay the tax for everybody else so that they can be free of the burden. That's the meaning of this funny story about the fish. And just to show that God's in charge of every detail of life. If you want to go fishing, you're not going to find a coin in the mouth of very many fish. But Jesus knows. Take the first fish, find the coin. That coin is the exactly right amount to pay for both you and me. As if to say, God has this all worked out. You can't figure this out. You can't determine how it's going to work out. But God has every detail worked out. Whether he's showing us a vision of glory or whether he's allowing us to experience deprivation in the desert, God has it worked out, every detail. And he has it worked out in such a way that he's taking care of the whole story for us if we just do our little part. So Jesus Christ pays the entire debt of justice, the debt of sin, for our sake. And that's good news. That's great news. So whatever we're experiencing, highlights, lowlights, glory, poverty, whatever it might be in between, God has this all figured out. And our task, and our journey, is to put our trust in him and do his will. Put our trust in him. Not that we have to understand everything he's doing, but we have to trust that he's got it worked out. And that's a great, freeing, enjoyable way to live.